Turn over to Genesis chapter 1 with me. I'm going to be in verses 26 through 31. Let's read there first. Genesis 1, 26 through verse 31. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Several years ago, we were out running errands as a family, which we're prone to do. We like to hang together as a family, so we load up all six kids and get in the vehicle and go out and do mundane things of life. We enjoy being together. And my 10-year-old at the time was about 3, and he was hilarious and still is hilarious, tends to say things in funny ways that keep us rolling all of the time. And he had this way of turning phrases and getting them all jumbled up, and we didn't really correct him because by the time you have your third, you don't really want that stuff to be corrected. You just want to enjoy the hilarity of it. And he had this way of, instead of saying he didn't care about something, he said, "I don't matter." So if we were out running errands and you said to Braden, "Hey, Braden, would you like marble slab or Baskin Robbins, or do you want to just go home and eat Bluebell ice cream?" Because we do a lot of ice cream in our household. He would just say, "I don't matter, Daddy." And we would do it as many public places as we could possibly do because we found it pretty hilarious to have a 3-year-old walking around saying, "I don't matter" all the time. But the reality is, for many of us in the room this morning, a simple phrase that "I don't matter" may be at the core of what you actually think about yourself. To ask a question like, "Why am I in the world and do I matter? Does my life have any meaning or purpose on this earth at all?" And maybe this morning you're sitting there and you're saying, "Yeah, it's funny when you're 3, but it's not funny to me, Jay. I don't think I matter. I don't think my life has any meaning. It doesn't have any purpose in the world." You wouldn't be alone. King Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, when thinking about the big issues of life and the meaning of life, he says, "I hated life, for in pursuing and thinking about it, all of it seemed meaningless and vanity." And I want to, this morning, as we kick off a new series here at C3 called Unpacking the Big Questions, I want to unpack this morning for us this question of, does my life have any meaning? Why am I here? Is there any value in my life in any way? Do I matter? I want to try to unpack that question. It's the first question of a series where we're going to deal with, why does evil exist? Is there any truth in the world? Is Jesus really the only way? And a few other questions, the origins of the world and some other things that we're going to cover over the next 7 or 8 weeks. I want to deal this morning with whether or not we matter. And I want to take this text from Genesis chapter 1 when God creates man. And out of it, I want to take 4 statements that I think God would say to us this morning. If he were sitting here and you were having a conversation with him, I think he would take this text and I think he would turn it into 4 statements to say to you, you matter. This is your meaning. This is your purpose. This is your value in the world. This is why I created you. And I'll say them in both the positive and maybe the negative way. And you can take notes as God sort of presses those statements on your heart as we go. The first one this morning that I think God would say to us is out of verse 26 there. I think God would say to us this morning that you are thoughtfully designed. You are thoughtfully designed. You're not an accident. You're not random. You're not a mistake. You're not a conglomeration of molecules that happen to come together. No, you're thoughtfully, intentionally, carefully designed by the creator and the maker of the universe. The one who rules over all things thoughtfully and carefully and intentionally designed you. And when you start to ask a question about, do I matter? The creator of the universe would say, yes, you matter, because I thoughtfully, carefully created you. God shows us this in a unique way in verse 26. I already read it, but let's read it again. Verse 26, he says, then God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness, and let them have dominion. And then he goes on to say what they're to have dominion over. This is really interesting that he does this. We're not going to do it this morning, but if you look at the first 25 verses of Genesis chapter 1, whenever God speaks, something is created. Let there be light, and there's light. Let there be fish, and there's fish. Let there be birds, and there's instantly birds. And here, God does something else. He speaks, and nothing is created. Look at it. Let us make man. And there's a lot going on here. I'm not going to get through all of what God does. Excuse me, I'm struggling with a cold. I'm not going to get through all of what he means in that statement of, let us make man in our own image. But it is an aside nonetheless, right? God's talking to himself and he's saying, let's do something together. Let's make man in our image. And I would ask the question of you this morning, why does God do that? Why does God have a conversation with himself? You and I, if we were making something, we might pause and reread the instructions, right? Rewatch the YouTube video. Make sure we get it right because we don't want to mess it up. So pausing and thinking helps us get better at what we're doing. But God doesn't need to pause. God doesn't need to self-reflect. He doesn't need to think about it. The purpose why God gives an aside here is to show you how intentional he is. How different you are than everything else in all of creation. Nothing else does he pause for. He could do it without pausing, but he does it to show you there's intentionality in what he's about to accomplish, that he's doing something different with you and with me. He's making us after his own image, and so he pauses to show us that, not that he needs to make a better decision because he can understand all information instantaneously, but rather to show us something different about our meaning and about our purpose, that there's intentionality in the way that we're designed, in the way that we're created. The psalmist describes himself this way, and let's Psalms 139 up here on the screen. Think about the way the psalmist thinks about himself here in light of this, that you were intentionally, thoughtfully created. And in this way, the psalmist doesn't make it generic that all of us were thoughtfully created, but he makes it personal. I think this was what God would do with us this morning, is he would make it personal. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was not one of them. Look at the language. You formed my inward parts. You knitted me together. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, intricately woven. Everything about you was designed intentionally by the creator of the universe. Think about this for a minute. Every hair, every mole, your stature, all of the stuff that you look in the mirror and you hope no one else notices, that was put there by the creator of the universe, thoughtfully, intricately woven into who you are. Maybe you're a teenager here this morning, you're going through that really tough, awkward time, and you're wondering what's going on with your body. No, God made you that way. Let me just encourage you this morning. He made you that way with great intention and great design and great purpose. And not anything about you was not done by his careful, thoughtful hand. Every aspect of your being, your sense of humor, your way of thinking, the way you process information, it was designed by God, creator of the universe. And he would answer to you this morning and saying, do I matter in the world? He would say, oh yeah, you matter. You matter a lot to me because I was careful with you in your mother's womb. I remember in the inward parts in there how I began to intricately weave you together. I was careful with you. I was thoughtful with you. You are fearfully and you are wonderfully made. I think God would say to us this morning, you're not an accident. You're not random. You are thoughtfully, intelligently designed. Second thing that I think God would say to us this morning is that you're my image bearer. You're my image bearer. You're not insignificant. You're not unimportant. You're my image bearer. We saw it twice in verse 26. Let us make man in our image after our likeness. Look at how he says it in verse 27. In case you didn't catch it in verse 26, God says it again. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. In like 60 words, he tells us four times, you were made in the image of God. You were made in his likeness. You were designed to look like him. You were designed to be his image bearer on the earth. And this is a radical thought. I mean, let the weight of this and the meaning of this fall on us this morning. That when the invisible God wanted to make something visible on earth that reflected the nature of our God, he made us. He made you to be an image bearer. Not of some random thing, but of himself. God wanted you to look like him, to be like him. That in the all of the universe, you would look like the creator. You matter because God wants you to look like God. He wants you to bear his image and his likeness. He wants you to be an image of him in this world. Now, not all of what God is did he share with us. He didn't make us all powerful, if you were wondering. He didn't make you all knowing. He didn't make you everywhere at once. And similar attributes like that are not ours. But there are aspects of God's being that you see in Genesis 1 that he did give to us, that are designed to be the image of God in this world. He made us rational beings. So you look at creation and there's reason and intelligence and rational thinking in the way that he designed creation. You stick your head underwater at some island and see the coral and the fish and the colors, and you can't help but think, wow, God did that. You turn on the Discovery Channel and they're somewhere in Siberia drilling in the ice and they find these fish underneath there that no one's ever seen. And you're like, wow, the God of the universe, my God, he did that. It's almost like he just did it for himself. Like we haven't even seen it. Like what an amazing God. So there's intelligence, design, there's planning in the way that he did it. And he's done that with us. He gives you a mind to reason and to think. And as you go throughout the whole scriptures, what you find again and again is God calling us to renew our mind, to think rightly about him and about us and about creation and about salvation and about the word. He's constantly calling us to right thinking. So much so that Paul, when he's describing the gospel in Colossians chapter 3, describes us as renewing our mind to a true knowledge. The idea that our faith is just purely a blind faith without reason or without thought is nowhere in the scriptures. Amen. God designed us to be rational, thoughtful, intelligent beings who reflect the image of a great God. The second aspect that you see in that is that he designed us to be personal. So we're not only rational, but he designed us to be personal, like God is personal. You turn to Genesis chapter 2, and God is in the garden walking with Adam and Eve. I mean, it's a radical thought. The creator of the universe, if you were reading Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 for the first time, and you're looking at some God who could speak things into existence, Do you expect a God who can speak the sun into existence in an instant? He didn't go and get raw materials. He just spoke it and the sun existed. Does that God walk in a garden with Adam and talk to him? No, that's not what you would expect. But that is who God is. God is personal. And you see that in the making of man. He says it's not good for man to be alone, and he creates Eve. He makes us to be personal, and he expects us to relate to one another. As Seth talked about community, you see this in the working out of the church. Michael preached about it all throughout 1 Thessalonians, that we are designed to be personal beings. There's a moral aspect to the command to love our neighbor, but there's also a personal aspect to it, that we are to engage with people around us. So he designs us to be personal as he is personal. God didn't speak to us purely from heaven. He took on flesh, became a man, and dwelt among us. Our God is personal. He designed us to be personal. He also designed us to be moral. As I read a minute ago, God speaks about all of creation on the sixth day, and he looks at it and he says, it's very good. That's a moral judgment. It's either good or bad, and he says it's very good. And then here he starts to give them responsibilities, the making of what right living is supposed to look like. You're supposed to have dominion over all the earth. And then in Genesis 2, he starts to give them a few more responsibilities. But God is establishing that he is a moral being. He is not indifferent to the actions of man. The actions of man are to be ordered. There is a good and evil. And God cares about good and evil. And as a reflection of his image, so should we. We are not a people who are to be indifferent about what happens in the world. Rather, we are to be a people who are wise and thoughtful, that we use our intelligence that God has given and discernment to discern good from evil and to act appropriately in the same way that God would, that we would establish in our creation a reflection of our maker, that we are moral beings who make moral judgments and live in a way that is right and good and upright. You also see from it there's a spiritual aspect to this. But before I leave that, let me just make one other sort of, maybe I don't mean it to be funny, it's kind of funny aside. You hear people say that to err is human. Well, I sinned, I'm just human after all. Actually, that's sort of backwards. Actually, to be human is to not sin. You were designed that way. To err is to not be human. Actually, that's a destruction of the very image that God was trying to create. Human was designed to be image bearer, morally upright, moral rightness. And we so distorted it that we think that somehow humanity is to be sinful. And I get why we would do that in the fall. But that was not the intent, nor is it the image for which we are to live out. I fulfill the greatest element of my humanity in its truest sense in the way that God created me by walking in righteousness and reflecting an image of an moral, upright, righteous, holy God. I feel better getting that off my chest. All right, fourth thing that you see in that element of how we reflect the nature of God is that there's a spiritual aspect to us. There's an immortality aspect to that, to us. And God is eternal. He has no beginning and no end. We're immortal. We have a beginning. There's a starting point. But there is no end. Man has a soul. And from the early days in the scriptures, all the way through the pages of the scriptures, you find this concept that there is something that is to come after this physical life is over, that God is going to create a new heaven and a new earth, and there is going to be a forever aspect to us. The scriptures say that God has put eternity in the hearts of men, this idea that there is something that is next, something in the future. And the way we live in reflecting the image of God should say to the culture and to the world around us, there is a difference in that eternity, and there are two ways. There is a way of pain and separation, and there is a way of relationship and happiness forever. And embedded us intentionally by God's design, reflecting his very image and nature, is that we are going to continue forever. There's a spiritual aspect to our being. And all of life should be oriented this way. All of our life should be oriented around this concept that we are image bearers of God. We are image bearers in every moment of every day. And so we have to think this way in the way that we process through, reason, and think about the way that we live, because he's made us to be image bearers. And oftentimes in the moments, in the hardest moments of trying to figure out whether or not my life matters, is there any meaning to this at all? The meaning is found in living out the purpose for which you were designed and created. My meaning in every moment is to reflect the image of my Creator, to be an image bearer. I'm not insignificant. These moments are not insignificant. I'm not indifferent to good and evil. No, it matters because I'm an image bearer. God has made me to be his image bearer. Third thing I think God would say to us this morning, he'd tell us that we're thoughtfully designed. He'd tell us that we're his image bearers. The third thing he would tell us is that you're loved. You're loved. Maybe you would say it really, really directly. I love you. You're loved. You're not an unloved being. I love how he does it. In verse 28, you can almost just miss it. Verse 28, you see where he starts? Male and female, he created them, and God blessed them. And God blessed them. They haven't done anything to get blessing. They haven't done anything. They just got made. There's no good that they've done. They haven't lived out any of the commands that he's going to give them. They haven't fulfilled their role. They haven't been image bearers. And I don't really know. I've always kind of wondered this question for Adam when I get to heaven, like what's it like when God like blows into the dust and then you're like exist and you didn't exist previously? Like are you groggy in the morning like us? Like when you wake up, like what does that feel like? But Adam comes to, and by implication the way he says this, apparently he put Adam back to sleep in Genesis chapter 2, and then he pulls the rib out and makes Eve. Now they both come awake. And what's the first thing they hear as they're coming out? The blessing of God. Their maker, their creator. And it probably sounds something like what you find in Numbers chapter 6. I, the Lord, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to keep you. I'm going to make my face shine upon you. And I'm going to be gracious to you. I'm going to lift up my countenance upon you. And give you peace, and give you love, and give you joy, and give you hope. This is the voice of God blessing them before they've done anything, making his face shine upon them. And you are not this morning, and we are not, some part of a weird cosmic experiment by God. He's not an ogre sitting in heaven looking to zap somebody. It's not some grotesque like pawn or robot that we are. No, we are loved objects by the creator of the universe. And he would speak over you this morning this very simple truth that I love you, that I made you with intentionality, that I have a purpose for your life. You see it in what he gives them. He tells them that every plant is good for food. Every plant on the whole earth. In Genesis chapter 2, you turn the page, and God puts one tree in the center of the garden to reflect that he is the standard of righteousness. He is holiness. The whole earth is full of trees and fruit, and you can eat all of it, but just one tree. I just want you to understand and recognize that I'm the creator, that I'm the God, that I set the rules. One tree, you can't eat of that one tree. You can eat of every other tree in the universe. And what does the enemy do? God's holding out on you, Adam. God's trying to not let you be like him. He's trying to restrict what you can do. You got all the trees in the garden. You got all of the fruit-bearing trees. You can eat them, all of them, Adam. The enemy coming to say, Adam, he doesn't really love you. He doesn't care about you. He's trying to withhold from you. The maker of the universe says, everything I made is for you. Enjoy it. I'm a good God who loves you and is passionately for you. And as you begin to turn the pages in Genesis 2, obviously Adam and Eve, they fail. They fall. They believe the lie that God's not good, that God's holding out on them, and so they should eat the fruit and see what that's about. And so man fails, and then what does God do? He doesn't even leave Genesis chapter 2. God comes and meets them in love. And the story of the Bible, and if you're here this morning and you don't know a lot about God and you don't know a lot about Christianity and you feel like your life is messed up, you're in a great place. Because this place is full of people who have messed up. We are a messed up people. And we believe that all of us are messed up. And in the midst of our failure, God in his love interacts with us. The story of the scriptures, page after page, is the failure of man confronted by the love of God. Failure after failure after failure. The God of the universe, who made all things, doesn't respond by saying, I'm done with you. No. He responds with tireless, unending, never giving up, unrelentlessly pursuing us to know us and to show us his love. He never quits. He never stops. And he would say to you this morning, if years of ignoring him saying this to you, he would still say to you this morning, I love you. That's the point of Romans 5:8. God showed his love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God's love meets man's failure with unrelentless pursuit. Paul got this by Romans chapter 8 when he's going to praise God, and he says about the love of God, for I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else is going to be able to separate you from the love of God in Christ Jesus. God wants you to hear this morning that he loves you. He intentionally designed you to be his image bearer, and he is passionately loving you. It's what you were made for, to be loved by God. Fourth thing I think he would say to us this morning is that you're needed. You're needed. You're not unnecessary. That's a totally loaded word, and some of you are cringing that I said it. How are we needed? And I don't mean it in the sense that somehow God was lacking. And God doesn't say it in a way that God was lacking. God didn't lack some ability, some capability, or some capacity. We're needed because he designed the universe around us to be engaged in it. Remember the story in the Gospels when the disciples are like, hey, tell those people to be quiet. And Jesus says, well, if they're quiet, the rocks are going to cry out. And God could make the rocks cry out to worship, but God doesn't. God chooses to make the praises of infants and babes worship him. You go through further in the New Testament. How shall they believe in whom they have not heard? Does God need us to go and tell? No, God could make the rocks cry out. He could make the mountains. But yes, God designed it to where we speak the good news of the gospel. And when God was creating the universe, he created it in a way that we were a necessary part of creation. He didn't have to do it that way, but he did. This is the way he designed the universe. He made it so that our role is necessary and important in creation. He designed it to where our participation was not like just like sports have become. I don't want to rift on this too long, but sports have become where everybody gets a participation trophy. There's no winners or losers anymore. Everybody gets a trophy. And it's like, does my participation even matter? I mean, my team wasn't very good. We went 0-27 this season, but I still got a trophy. It's like, it didn't really matter whether I went to any games or actually tried hard or anything else. That's not what God does. God actually makes your participation real. Like, it really matters. It really has an impact. He designed you to have a real effect in creation and in the universe. You are really necessary to the purposes and the plans of God. You are a real participant in what he is doing. And here you see two aspects of it. I'll describe the physical, and then let's blow it out into what does it mean to us. There's grow and rule here. Grow the world and rule the world is what he's going to say to Adam and Eve. See this in verse 28. He blesses them, and then he says to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Let's stop with that for a second. I think we're really good as a church in this one, right? The whole multiply, fill the earth, be fruitful. There's a lot of kids in our church, as evidenced by the fact that half the people in the room left when we dismissed kids under the age of 10, right? We're filling the earth. And there's an aspect in which we're designed to fill the earth with people. There's a spiritual aspect that's far greater than this, though. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 15, when he asks a rhetorical question, why did I make the covenant of marriage? Why does marriage exist? Why did I put a male and a female together? And God answers the question by saying this in Malachi 2:15, to produce godly offspring. In Psalm 78 and verse 4, the psalmist says that we are commanded to tell the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord, his might, and the wondrous things that he has done. Our role in this world is to fill the earth, but to not just physically fill it with people, but to fill it with people who know the wonders and glorious deeds and the might of our God, to produce godly offspring, that we would structure our lives in a way that we're thoughtful about what are we doing about the next generation to know about the greatness of our God. Part of our image bearing is to fill the earth with people who are overwhelmed with the greatness and the goodness and the wondrous aspects of the glory of God. And I know a lot of you in the room this morning are parents. And in these questions of like, you know, you wake up in the morning and you feed another kid breakfast, and then you sit in traffic for forever, and then you take them to school, and then you come home and you do homework, and the monotony, and you go to bed, rinse, repeat, you do it again and again and again and again. It's like, does any of this have any meaning? There is real value in producing godly offspring. You were made for that. We were created for that. We're to fill the earth. My six kids were sitting in the first service and right up here on the front row, and I was looking at them. I was thinking, that's what I was made for. I wasn't made for my job in that sense. I was made to produce godly offspring, to teach them about the glories and the wonders of our God, that they would grow up and they would fill the earth with godly offspring. This is a real and necessary role, which God would say, you're needed in that. And as a parent, if you're not in that game, if you're just like, if you've got the multiply part down, but you're not producing godly offspring, let me just encourage you this morning, you are not going to find meaning and purpose in your life until you begin to live out the fullness of what God has called you to do. And a part of that fullness is producing godly offspring and raising kids who know the glory and greatness of God. There's a second aspect to this here, and that is about letting them have dominion. Now, I know some of you are like, I knew I was made to have dominion. Like, this is great. I'm a ruler. Look at what he says in verse 26. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish. And he goes through a whole litany there. But in the middle of it, he says, over all the earth. Look, he says it again in verse 28. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and have dominion. And then he goes through the whole litany again. Do you know that you were designed and made by God to be a ruler? Part of our image bearing is to reflect in this world the kingship and the rule and the reign of God over all of the universe. He made you to rule. He made you to be a little king, to be his representative. He made you to govern the earth. You get to Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God speaks into chaos. The earth was without form and void. And what does God do? Into the midst of the chaos, the without form and with this void, what does God do? God speaks into it order. And he structures it. And our responsibility, part of our mandate, is to rule and to reign on the earth as image bearers of God. That the chaos in which we live our lives in should be ordered by us. In other words, there's no place or opportunity for slothful, lazy Christians. There's no place for that. God didn't design us to be like that. He designed us to be thoughtful, diligent, ordered, disciplined rulers. To walk into the midst of chaos and to bring order and structure to it. Maybe you're a student here this morning, and you get home from school in the afternoon, you open up the backpack, and there's papers all shoved in there. There's assignments to do and papers to write. And your job is to rule and reign over your homework, to put it into structure and order, and to develop out of it some cognitive thought that reflects the problems that have been put in front of you. And the same is true for us. Whether you're a broker or an architect or a lawyer or a teacher or a mom, talk about chaos in the house, right? And that chaos of all of those things, we show up into the office and we think, what am I doing with my life? Does any of this matter? Those are opportunities for us to reflect the nature of our God, to bring order and structure and thought in the midst of the chaos, not for ourselves, but to reflect the image of the one who created us. I just want to encourage you this morning that in the midst of the chaos of what we live in, the wind and the waves of culture beating against us, the lack of structure and absolute truth, and nothing matters, God designed you to be able to stand in the midst of that chaos and begin to order it, to make it right. And the fullness of making it right will not happen until he returns. And what a glorious sight that'll be when the God of the universe shows up and makes all the wrongs right and brings all the chaos back into order and transforms the earth and makes it into a new earth and a new heaven. That's going to be a spectacular sight. But if God was looking in your life this morning, and he is, by the way, would he say that's a little picture of what the new heaven and the new earth is going to look like? The way he walked into work and began to bring order and structure. He's demonstrating the rule and reign of Christ. There's a little picture of a new earth there. The way that family, have you watched that family over there? Look at the way their family, look at the way they manage their lives. There's not chaos reigning in their house. Their kids aren't running crazy. They seem fairly well structured and thoughtful. They're considerate about how they spend their time and how they spend their money. And what they do, those are reflections of demonstrating the rule and the reign of Christ, that we are to be measured, thoughtful, disciplined people to reflect in our nature and in our living the goodness and the greatness of our God, who is ordered and structured and who is ruling and reigning over all of creation. It's an argument to step into the midst of chaos and begin to pull it apart and bring it back to order. And you know what I think is cool about this? Is as we begin to engage in that, it causes in our hearts greater worship for our Creator because we realize how hard it is. That our order doesn't stay. We fix it today and it's broken tomorrow. And it's a reminder to us that there's a greater ruler, a greater King, who when he makes the earth right again, it will forever be right again. When he creates a new heaven, when he makes it all right, it will be right for all of eternity. And so we set it right, our little chaos, we set it right to reflect the image of the one who made us, but it's temporary and it seems futile at points, but it should result in us to have greater worship for the one who is over all things. We connect with you this morning. Your life has meaning. It has value. It's a fair question to say, why am I here? Do I matter? And the God of the universe would say to you this morning, you matter. You're valuable. I thoughtfully, carefully designed you and made you. You are my image bearer. I made you to reflect my likeness of an invisible God. I made you to reflect me in all of creation. I love you. I'm passionate about you. I'm pursuing you. I'm relentlessly, tirelessly coming after you to remind you that while you were still a sinner, I demonstrated my love for you, sending Christ to the cross. I love you, and you're needed. Live a life that that demonstrates the rule and the reign of Christ, raising up people who speak about the goodness and the greatness of our God. Your role is necessary and important and valuable in my creation. You are not insignificant. You matter to God. You matter to the Creator of the universe. Let's pray.